Hi, this is Craig and welcome to the Agile Revolution. This is a special podcast we recorded in conjunction with the This Agile Life podcast, today hosted by Jason Tice and Natalie Simonson. This was recorded at Agile 2015 in Washington, D.C. Basically, we just got together in the open space hall and just rapped with a bunch of people who turned up. Enjoy.
Hey, we're at Agile 2015. We're just talking about stuff. So this is This Agile Life with a whole bunch of people here at Agile 2015 in Washington, D.C. So
I'm going to interrupt you, Jason. Yeah, it's not just This Agile Life. We also have...
Welcome to the Agile Revolution.
Indeed. It's Craig.
And Renee.
And interrupting was Natalie.
And the thing is, you guys are smart because you just turned the recorder on. I like I said, we wanted to plan a lead-in, and so who knows what you're going to edit out of that. But let's talk about some stuff. So if you're here and you've joined us, introduce yourself, and maybe I'll get a clock out, so we'll make sure we go through a few topics, and we'll talk for about 30 minutes tonight. How about that?
Sounds great.
All right, who wants to start?
We're going to start right here with Troy, because I'm looking straight at him.
Introductions.
Yes.
So, Troy Tuttle, I'm a Lean Agile coach based out of Kansas City, Kansas, and I find a lot of value in complexity and systems thinking and apply it to organizations.
Troy, anything you want to talk about?
I'll go with the flow.
Okay, so you're going to pass.
Yeah.
Who's next?
Steven Vance, I'm the Director of Agile at Zipcar. Quick little shout out to Merrill Lamont, number one This Agile Life fan, who was on the Agile Games podcast with you guys a while back. He just wanted me to say that. I like blending sort of good analytics, people stuff, and systems thinking with a lean flavor into my organizational transformation.
Okay, well, could we start a topic right now just for the people? Because Steven, I know one thing you wanted to talk about was you have your own version, your own framework, right, to scale.
Yes.
So I know, Natalie, you might have some thoughts on that. So
are you throwing me under Zipcar?
Yes. Yes. So tell us what you're doing. Like, give us
we
an elevator.
We have Zip vans too, just not Zip buses.
So give us an elevator pitch for your approach, and if you can, what makes it unique?
So I'm almost reluctant to call it a framework, but just because it exists and has some parameters, it is a framework. I'd almost call it an unframework. And specifically, I don't enforce a particular way of practicing Agile on the teams themselves, as long as they meet a certain contract with the organization. The idea is that we have a certain way of formulating work, and so they take work from a queue as a team and at a larger written, that's when they do the breakdown. They have a certain minimum set of requirements in terms of continuous integration, which facilitates the coordination and sharing of source spaces. In terms of coding standards, there are some practices that are sort of suggested. And then they have to be able to produce some level of working software of a certain quality and some level of forecasting and progress reporting to facilitate, you know, the larger organizational thing. But within those parameters, everything else, we don't tell them how to estimate, we don't tell them whether to do stand-ups, anything like that. You know, we also expect continuous improvement, but within that, it's entirely between the team and their coach.
Okay, someone asked Steven a question about his framework, please.
What have you called it? Outcome-oriented Agile?
I do not want to put a label on it.
Okay, so it's otherwise known as symbol?
Sure.
The artist formerly known as.
I would buy into something like outcome-oriented Agile better than most of the labels I've thought of. Yes.
Ooh, ah. That would be the acronym. I'm just...
That would...
Oh, wow. I love me some acronyms.
Ooh, ah.
TLAs are good.
So I guess, Steven, a question I have is there any particular reason why your organization went down this road as opposed to not using one of the, I want to say, the more marketed frameworks that we've heard about at Agile 2015, Save, Less, any of those?
I'm of the opinion that Scrum can't last you forever, and also that things like normalizing story points go entirely against the grain of what they're supposed to do, and that we have this thousands of year old way to roll up forecasts between teams. It's called a calendar. And so why do we need to tell them how to say something in the terms of that calendar as long as they can say something in terms of that calendar? And besides, this allows teams to individually move their own directions and then cross-pollinate as they see fit rather than rubber stamping something.
So what do you do when a team is not performing?
Everybody has a coach.
Everyone has a coach?
Everybody has a coach, okay. Yeah. We call them Scrum Masters because that's a label that the organization knew how to make sense of from an HR perspective. But I'm hiring people who are coaching capable, and we have a community of practice among the coaches where we trade experiences and help each other out. To, you know, if something gets stale, somebody else will step in and help facilitate things, especially if the coach wants to be more of a participant.
Okay. Is there a predefined set of things that the team must do, and that's provided to them and saying that, you know, like, whether it be metrics or certain things, are you providing them some guardrails or...
Really everybody started with Scrum, mm-hmm. and have evolved to things that aren't recognizable as Scrum anymore in a lot of ways, in for most of the teams. So they started with that common basis, and there are the things that were like some of the static analysis, code coverage, also part of how I initially engaged with Zipcar as an independent consultant was as a player coach, as a technical coach. So I came in and did TDD and pair programming training and actually embedded in the team and coded with them anywhere from 1 to 3 months. I've coded with almost every engineer on staff. But use that as a platform to sort of move out into coaching in other areas, and then eventually hired in and now don't do much coding.
All right, so Stephen, I got a challenge for you. Yes. So since we do want to go through a few topics tonight, so you should take what you've told us. Number one, I'm sure can people look you up on LinkedIn?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so we'll put that on the show notes. But also, you should submit an experience report for Agile 2016 in Atlanta, mm-hmm. and you can come and tell us more about this framework and maybe give us some learnings that you have about why you think it provides value versus some of the other approaches that are out there.
And how it's different from Fred George's program at Anarchy would be interesting.
Okay. All right, so next topic. I'm watching the clock here, so we have some variety. Anyone else want to throw? Here we go. We have someone that was at Lean Coffee this morning who I think I heard wanted to go to happy hour.
Well, that's a great intro right there, huh?
Yeah, how about that? So person who wants to go to happy hour, who are you?
Hi, I'm Abby Bangzer. I'm a QA with ThoughtWorks out of Chicago. And yes, I was a first-time conference speaker this year, and so I am going to go to the speaker happy hour shortly. So
we have a speaker happy hour?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. See ya.
Maybe you should be on the DevOps track. Maybe that's it. Maybe it's a track.
I bet you have to have spoken to have done that. I haven't spoken yet. I'm on Friday. So what did you want to ask a question about something?
I mean, so the reason that I'm back here, I think, from the Lean Coffee was we were speaking a bit about kind of Scrum boards being something which covers from ideation all the way through to deployment. And so what I did speak about is as a QA, you can sometimes get a little bit stuck in testing that feature. I tend to break out of that box and try and get involved in quality of all the way through to production and the deployment process, because being quality on the development machine isn't really worth it. So it was an interesting concept that was raised, and I was a huge fan of the idea. So,
yeah, where that stemmed from, I'll share, since I injected a topic about big boards, and we were all making jokes about, we like big boards at Lean Coffee. It was an experience report we talked about on episode 95 of This Agile Life that Melanie Hopwood gave about her team, and they have a product board that's full lifecycle. And then even a few people after the session, and then also even a few people on Twitter actually posted comments about, like, maybe you should make your board smaller and your process simpler. And what came out in the Lean Coffee that I think you brought up, Abby, is that there's value in seeing the whole thing. So by a show of hands, we got 9 people around, no, 10 people around the table here. Who thinks it's a good idea? Like, big boards or not big boards or...
Thumbs up.
Thumbs up. Okay, so we're all going to have fun with this big boards thing. So, all right. Anyone else? So who's got does anyone else have a full lifecycle product board like I guess we described at Lean Coffee?
I think one of the things that we've spoken about, Renee and I have spoken about before, is you at least want to be able to look left and right of the board. So whether it makes sense to have it on your board in the team, if that's part of a large program, maybe it doesn't make sense. But at some point, you do need to look left and right of your team to see what's coming downstream, what's going in.
And for those that may not recognize that voice, that is Craig Smith from the Agile Revolution.
That's one.
So since we haven't kind of deviated from our introductions, that was fun. So let me ask a question then. Why do we think people don't have these big boards? If we're saying at this table here that we think there's value in this practice, why don't we see that more in the community as practitioners?
Can I turn the question sideways?
Go for it, Troy.
Okay. So I don't know that it's a matter of size, although it's nice to seem
small. That's
thought.
What she says.
Oh, my goodness. Hey, where's the happy hour? Yeah. I'm going.
So I think the goal is to visualize it. If you're doing, you know, so from the Kanban world, the goal would be to visualize reality. And if your reality is big and messy and long, visualize it, right? And find the problems with it. And if it's small and short and compact, then visualize that, right? And whether it's big or small, it doesn't matter. I think the important thing with visual management is to visualize reality, not an ideal, is the key for me.
And that's what we spoke a lot about in Lean Coffee, was that when you're talking about make it simpler, cool, but you can't make it simpler if you're not honest about where you start. So if 36 feet is indicative of the fact it's too much, yeah, great, but let's put it out there, be honest about it, and then figure out what we can pull.
The 36 feet is telling us something.
Yeah.
And I actually make a reference in one of our previous presentations around, if your work's in that complicated space, then you can have a really simple board. If it's in the complex space, then you actually need to have a wide board, which does represent your full value stream map.
And I think this might be a case where the tools limit what we think of as possible.
Yeah.
It's hard to fit that big and that complex a board on even the widest of screens.
Yeah, definitely.
So I have a question about this. How do you think a big board impacts a team and their ability to focus on the work at hand and not what's coming and the grandeur of it all? Any thoughts on that?
So I've had a team once that had about a 7 meter wide board, which had 100 cards on it. We still managed to get through the daily scrum in 10 minutes, and it was really, really valuable, the discussions. So yeah, we looked for the outliers, what wasn't moving, what was moving, but it's still just as effective.
Because we've been experimenting with teams with, you know, limiting work in progress and having them laser focused, and have had some successes by removing the noise from the team. So, you know, like, it's kind of two different ways of doing the same thing, you know, getting to that end goal, but with a different focus. Big picture down to laser focused. And I think there's value in both based on where the team is in their journey. But it is still a different approach that people can take.
What I'd be worried about with the lasered focus is job happiness and kind of connectedness to the business value that you're producing as a development team. Mm-hmm. I've been on teams that developers have felt that it was a waste of their time to go to showcases, and that they were getting pressure to get stories out. They didn't have time for those showcases. And that showed to me that they didn't actually feel a connection to the value you're producing for our end users. And I think that a board like this that can show the value you're going to be providing and why we're moving in certain directions can target your questions about maybe story breakdowns and things to actually, is that implementable, and not like, do you agree or disagree? You're like, oh, I see where you're coming from on that. But to implement it, we have these other questions.
I'm just wondering if you as a QA or someone's UX designer or somebody, being able to see forward must be a bonus, because you're not always just testing the software, but you want to test the ideas that are coming down to it, right?
Absolutely. I mean, there's that whole school of context-driven testing, and I think that that's the idea of that you only have to worry about what matters for the value you're providing. And so we were in a session earlier this morning with Lisa, Crispin, and Emma, and they were talking about how you test an input field is going to be very different, or a form. It's going to be very different if it's going to be used mobile or web. It's going to be very different if you're targeting adults or children. And that's why it's good to know if you're shifting focus of the product as a whole.
All right. Thank you for sharing. So,
you get a drink. I will stay. You guys are really throwing me under this drinking bus here.
Well, that's good.
For those listening, I am still here and with no beers in front of me.
I don't know where it is. So you can tell where it is.
You'll be double fisting by the time you get down. Okay. We know.
Let's do a few more. We're doing about 5 minutes. We don't have the Lean Coffee buzzer, but who wants to throw another one out there and introduce yourself?
Sure, I'll go.
Who are you?
Hi, I'm Jenny Tarwater, also an Agile coach from Kansas City, like Troy. What I get excited about is new organizations that are just discovering this fantastic way to examine things and get feedback and adapt and change as you go. And so I've spent a lot of time at the conference going to talks and workshops about how to learn these concepts, and they've been fun.
So what'd you do today then?
So one of the things I did today with Jason Tice was we went to Waterfall Theater, in which we learned how to iteratively create sketch comedy.
No, let's be specific. We put on a show.
We did.
We put on a 12-minute sketch comedy show about waterfall development.
Yeah. So John Crenshaw,
Crescent, right?
Well, there we go. I just learned. He facilitated this, and it was great, and we did ship.
Yes, we shipped.
We've had four teams that shipped.
So, and I believe there were elements of this have been posted on Twitter and on YouTube. So you can, we will attempt to find some evidence. If not, go watch the tweet stream from Agile 2015. But just put yourself in a picture here. Imagine using waterfall techniques to go to Starbucks or to, what was the one your group did again?
We kind of did the arc of a couple that dated and got engaged and then grew old together.
Yeah, and I know the group that I was in, we did, we're going to plan this trip to Disney World, yeah. And we kept planning and planning and planning, and then at the very end, after we had invested a lot of time to plan, our kids decided they wanted to go to see, who was it? Katy Perry. Yeah. They wanted to go to Katy. So we took the plan and we ripped it up, because we love to rip up things on this afterlife.
You love to rip things up.
Yeah.
So yeah, so that was cool.
Yeah, and then the second game today was really cool. It was based off the Cards Against Humanity game, but it was Cards for Agile.
Now what was that?
It was, so for those who haven't played Cards Against Humanity, you have 10 cards with phrases on it, a question with a blank is proposed, and you try and fit your words into that blank. And you can try and be funny about it or extremely accurate. And so we had a lot of fun with using Agile buzzwords to answer Agile questions, and it really got you thinking about some pretty funny concepts.
Can you give us an example of one?
Oh boy. The first one I can think of is you can make a retrospective go better with blank, and the winning card was vodka. So that was obviously a more humorous one. But then there was some really nice kind of things like, what is it that executives get in our way with, right, and stuff. And we say things like PowerPoints. So,
awesome.
Yeah.
And Fizz, who did that session, by the way, the Cards Against Humanity?
The Cards Against Humanity session was done by Bob Payne and Beth Miller.
Okay, awesome. We'll put that in the show notes so you guys can check it out. All right, anything else?
No.
Do you want to plug your conference?
Yeah, I do. Well, first, I want to say that I'm in competition for the number one fan for this Agile Life, so thank you very much. I'm a little celebrity awestruck right now.
And you found the Agile Revolution, so you got to listen to that now as well.
Yeah, less time on the weekends for me to do things I'm supposed to do. Troy and I, this was actually Troy's brainchild here. We're putting on a Lean Agile Kansas City conference in October. Troy, would you like to talk about it?
2015.leanagilekc.com. And so the idea is, what I noticed about our local community was people would have conferences and the developers would have their conference and they go off to a corner, right, and do their thing. And leadership would have their conference and they go off to a corner. And BAs and QAs would have their conference and go off to a corner. And no one's talking about this stuff together. So the idea is to bring all these cross-functional, or all these different specialties together in a cross-functional way, which we're supposed to be doing to help solve these things.
So you have a date, right? It's October 2015.
October 27th.
Okay, so 27th. Right before Thanksgiving, end of October. I know when this goes live, I don't believe you'll be selling tickets, but tickets will go on sale. And I know John and myself are going to be there, where I'm sure there'll be craziness occurring. So, yeah. All right, well, let's move on. Who else wants to talk? And by all means, if you got Craig or Renee, you guys want to get in and talk about something, go for it.
You're hosting.
I'm hosting.
You're doing well.
I'm hosting your podcast. Okay.
That's it.
This is a nice, relaxing podcast.
We've outsourced,
right?
The podcast.
You have? Oh, I see. Okay. Hey, you offshored it.
That's it. Outsourced and offshored.
Yes. All right. Anyone else? Nice.
But they say offshoring sometimes decreases the quality, so we might have to assess that.
So I want to talk about Jess Sutherland's talk, which actually don't have the name of it in front of me, so if someone can
I was
at
the same one. This is
so it was Jeff and Dan Greening.
Yeah,
and
Agile,
I think,
Leadership.
Was, yeah, something about leadership, I knew it was. So I was happy and angry at exactly the same time throughout the whole talk.
Yeah.
And the reason why I was really happy was it was great to see a luminary thought leader, founder of Scrum, finally talking about things other than Scrum. But without necessarily giving it the kudos that maybe he should have. And what was also interesting was, I guess, you know, I was frustrated because it's been so long that it took him to get to that point. So there was lots of references to economic views, which is actually Don Reinerston's work. There was lots of references to master autonomy and purpose, which is Dan Pink's drive work. There was references to Kanban, limiting work in progress. And there was some really interesting jabs at people inside of it too, which I felt was slightly offensive. Yeah.
Would you give us for those that were not there, could you give us an example of one of those, just aside from the high-level points? And if not, then that's okay.
I'd be happy to.
Okay.
There was a lot of reference to holding somebody's hand. Mm-hmm. In particular to somebody that is very well-known for doing retrospectives, and that is... I completely agree with you, Renee. There was a lot of kind of, oh wow, did that just happen kind of moments. It even started off in somewhat of a jabbing tone with between both Jeff and Dan.
I missed this front. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. They were like, oh, fancy that, you're kind of famous, Jeff. And then it sort of like went back and forth. God, okay. I hope they don't listen to this podcast. They've got more important things to do, right?
I don't think Jeff would have any problem with that.
Well, the thing that's interesting, I wrote this note in a prior Lean Coffee session, and it's something I've heard, you know, sometimes we call ourselves, like, we talk about cat herding.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, does that have a negative connotation? Because it's like, we should be empowering people, we should be helping them learn, but just the nature of kind of cat herding, I guess I will posture to say that I think that's somewhat negative.
Yeah,
it's derogative. So
yeah.
So I was in that talk as well, and experienced some of what you guys experienced. But there were two things that were interesting that I took away from it.
Yes.
One was this idea that your retrospective should start your sprint.
Yep.
As in creating what it is you want to possibly change and experiment with, and that should kick off the work. So I thought that was kind of cool.
And I thought it was really good. I was really actually pleased with that change. I was just thought it was odd that this is the way it was always meant to be. And I'm going, no, you've changed it, but that's okay. I mean, it's okay to change. It's okay to say, hey, we got it wrong, we've changed it, and we're now going to think about it more as an experiment. Great.
And I don't think you would find that there are hundreds, if not thousands, of teams that have already done that and not felt to call it out as a, yeah, you were wrong.
But you used to be doing Scrum Butt if you did that.
Right? Yeah.
And then the second thing I noticed, and it's because I went to a talk yesterday by Troy McGinnis, and Dan was supporting that talk. And it was interesting because if you remember, Jeff at the end said, a perfect Scrum team, we've decided, is not 7 ±2, it's 5. And just the day before, in the same conference with the same Dan, the answer in that one was that it's 15 because you're trying to eliminate dependencies. And there was a whole thought about that. And it just made me recognize that with Agile, we have to be careful, you know, when we're talking to new people, because I'm confused, you know, and I'm hearing two different...
Oh, see, I thought that was limiting features into a sprint to 5. It was team size, was it?
It kind of seemed to go back and forth between the two. I think you're both like, yes, but you're both right. Was that it was 5 features or concepts?
Yeah.
Because it's too much for your brain to control, like to handle.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. You're telling me that Scrum is limiting work in progress?
Yes.
All right.
Hence the angry and happy at the same time.
There you go. All right.
How else do you get twice the work done in half the time?
That's
the tagline guy here.
Troy actually said up to 15 before you start to have a fairly precipitous fall off. And so he was putting that in the context of if you can coalesce teams in order to minimize dependencies, you can actually go that large. And he had some pretty, you know, pretty compelling argument for that without having a precipitous fall off in the performance of the team.
I think with all of these and across the week of sessions is that probably what new people coming into to Scrum, Agile, whatever, and I think there's about 40% of people to this in the conference
are first
new.
Timers.
Yeah, they're new or like both
into
the conference.
Yeah, new and first timers.
Virgins.
Yes.
We try to be politically correct when Amos is not here.
Yeah, you know what? So you've got three Australians on here. Yeah, there's not a chance. So I think that there's a tendency for some presenters to present as if their word is law. And I'm going to give Renee a shout out, and I've had several colleagues say the same thing. Renee is so laid back when she was giving her presentation, and it was not officious. It was very consumable, and it didn't feel like you must do this or you're failing. And I think that there's other sessions that I've been to where it felt like this is the only way to do it. And for newbies to hear that, that's incredibly confusing. I think that there needs to be a little bit more of an attitude of these are options. You need to evaluate each individual, you know, situation and apply and try, what you think may work best.
But that, I mean, to call it like it is, that's jockeying in the market because there's a lot of new people here who want help, who want to buy training, who want to buy coaching. And so, of course, people are going to jockey and say, hey, check me out. It's the best thing ever. So
I guess my response to that then is if the intention of this conference is to educate and not sell, then perhaps, it needs to be more transparent as to that.
Which
is
one you're
the,
doing.
But the interesting thing is you can't, and Jason, you're a track chair. I've been a track chair previously. But you can't tell that in a summary. So you can take something about maybe who's presenting it, but you don't want to bias the decision on that. You can look at something, and I'm sure every one of those talks, and I know I reviewed lots of them, and I've seen some of them, and some have been good, and some of them I think, how the heck did that even get through?
You know, and I'm gonna say this here, and actually it's something I was gonna submit to like Bob Payne for next year because the help track this year was an experiment.
Well, yeah, and I was on that.
Yeah, but an experiment, an idea I have that we actually, I know we talked about it and we were saying, could we do this help or not? I think it would be very interesting to figure out if there would be a way to do some type of like video style interviews with submitters as part of the evaluation process. Like literally 10 minute Skype call, sit down with someone like the track chairs and like have a conversation just like we're doing to kind of see what they're gonna talk about. And yes, someone could game it, but I would say another cool thing is that could be made fully transparent. So put them all on YouTube. And then if people want to...
Or maybe submit via video.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can,
Maybe do a lightning version in 5 minutes of your talk.
Well, that's a good idea, but I like the idea of having a conversation. You know, we write user stories to have conversations. Write a conference proposal that's like a user story, and then as part of the evaluation, let's have a conversation about it. I know there's work involved, and I would think that maybe there's the need to like do kind of a... figure out how we make that scalable. But I think there's an idea there that may improve, that would give us better data to make better choices for the program.
I think it's a great idea. I don't know whether it's scalable across the thousands of submissions that come in, but I think if you even get through that first round or something.
The way I would say is like to do some type of a prelim vote and then kind of screen down and use that to make the final selection. But I'm gonna submit that to Bob Payne, who's the Bob Sarney. There's too many Bobs in the Agile space. So Bob Sarney, who's the conference chair for 2016, and there are lots of great ideas. If he likes it, he can roll with it. If not, we'll go from there. So, want to do one more topic, and then we'll wrap it up? Anyone else got one more? Or are we all so dying to go to happy hour?
Still here.
Thank you, Abby.
For
the listeners, she actually ducked out and just came back.
Yeah, she brought us all drinks. We wish.
Clink.
Anyone else? If not, I got one way to wrap it up. So
I can suggest something.
Okay, so this is a new voice. This is
Serge Beaumont. Okay, I'm an Agile consultant from the Netherlands. And with respect to expertise, I tend to do large-scale implementation, so 25 teams at the same time, 15 teams at the same time, stuff like that. Also smaller ones. Product ownership I do a lot about. And what I've noticed, so I've been around for quite some years. I've also, last one, Agile 2000X I've been, was 2010. And one of the things I really noticed that for, if you have a lot of experience, the core, or the whole tracks this year, were pretty much elementary or introduction stuff. Mm. And that does make sense, because all the people I've talked to are very new. I think most of the people around the table here probably already in this space for quite some years, maybe 10, maybe 15, I don't know. But there's a whole new world of people to help, to address. So I basically, for the whole week, ducked out of most of the presentations. I sat about back there near the Scrum Alliance booth, and I've been coaching. And that's been tons of fun to help people to get some one-to-one conversations out. It's also very interesting to see what the things are that people nowadays have an issue with. I think my experience is like the old stuff plus enterprise scaling, which tends to be the addition of the new. So I was wondering what your experience there is in this, what the new generation was.
So I can echo that. Today I had probably one of the best couple of hours of conversation, which was completely impromptu. I was a booth bitch today. And somebody came by. So Chris Sterling was there with me and just happened to introduce me to, I get the names right, Brent Barton and David Hussman. And we had conversations about team health, retrospectives, conflict, and it was completely informal and so educational. And I think that to get that sort of, you know, like that next level of learning, the open spaces and the dev jams are the key to go to. And I think that the conference has done a great job with that this year, as far as, you know, like having that available for, you know, if the tracks are not to their liking.
Yeah, I know. I said on the episode from last night that
I was not here.
That
for.
You were not here for, because we don't know where you went. Where we all won stuff. Like I sat down with Troy McGinnis. So I guess what I would say is, obviously, and I know I wrote a blog post before the conference that to like check out Open Jam and like go to the coaching clinic, which is free, so you can sit down with someone with experience. And these are things, even though most people will probably hear this after the Agile 2015 has ended, but these are things that occur frequently at many Agile conferences. So I know I've volunteered as a coach and like a coach's clinic at multiple conferences. So if you decide to make that investment to show up, I would almost encourage you, challenge yourself to not spend all your time in the sessions. Like, so take a session and just exit off and say, I'm going to walk around and meet people, maybe go to a coaching session, maybe either sit in the open jam or offer to hold an open jam session, and have that experience, especially if you're just getting started.
Any other thoughts on that? Or?
Well, I think the thing that, yeah, people often have this investment that I'm going to this conference, I have to see all the presentations I want, or there's that fear that you come into an open jam and you're going to look crazy. But it's like this, what we're doing around here is just you can throw a question out in an open jam. You don't have to present on something. You can say, I want to know about this. And I think you find most people in the Agile community are pretty open to wanting to help. So don't be afraid if you haven't been to that type of thing.
But however, my experience has been, because I've been an open space moderator for many years as well, in the Netherlands with all kinds of things, I have found that you cannot, it's hard to combine them. If you have conference tracks and at the same time an open space, it's really hard because the open space doesn't fill up. You want a lot of people walking around, a lot of sessions going on. And I think it's much better if you do either one or the other. I think the Scrum Gathering of 2011, I don't know, it was one of those ones in Orlando. The last day was full open space. Actually, the really cool thing with Owen Harrison was there, the guy who invented the whole thing. He was there, he was kind of the moderator for it, and it was just all open space all the time with everybody. And that's insanely cool, because then you get real conversations, you get these groups, and everybody's in that same mode, because that's what you really need with an open space. You need the whole group, everybody, to be in the same mode. So what I'd like to see for next Agile 2016 is to have the last day just to be all open space all the time. I think that would be awesome.
So two thoughts on that, because number one, what you're talking about there, Serge, that's the model we use for like Agile games, where like the last day of the conference was open space, and that works very well. The other one is just, I want to report on the experience here, since I guess I think I'm the only person at the table who went to the coaches clinic that was held in Washington, D.C. the 2 days immediately prior to the start of the conference. So I guess I am now on my sixth full day of Agile. So 2 days coach camp, 4 days conference. And I'm done. I'm about. So that was the question about doing an open space on day five of the Agile 2016 conference would be, would people still be engaged? Because it's a pretty long week, and open space is probably more engaging than going to set conference sessions. So it'd be an interesting experiment, but I wonder if people would still be engaged for the challenge.
And I was thinking more around to your comment around, you know, the difference between expertise inside of the conference itself. And it's something that we were considering inside of Australia is having this ability to split beginners versus experts and have some content for experts potentially in the program, or just to render to both of those audiences more evenly.
Yeah, and also the level of depth, because what I've really liked in the coaching I've done in those coaching clinics is because it's a conversation, just like you would have in an open space. I mean, you can really get deep down into the problems that they have, talk to some issues, and generally, I mean, a lot of teams come back. All teams have trouble with integrating incidents into their regular work. All teams, they all have trouble. Like, some themes keep coming over and over, not getting story points. There's a whole boatload of those things. But at the same time, they have this unique way, or their organization doesn't see the issue in their own unique way. You really have to drill down into them. So, to my mind, the whole reason open space exists is, you know, it was about the conversation outside of the regular sessions. That's how it existed. So I think that is super valuable, especially to bring like the new and the old together and to have a conversation.
So are you going to go see Dan Mesnick talk about that tomorrow?
Probably. I haven't. Oh, I live from day to day, actually.
Oh, you live? Okay. Yeah. So he's doing a session about using open space more freely in Agile on Friday morning. So. Okay. Well, so here's a fun way to wrap this up here. So let's do a lightning round in terms of tonight is the party. If you're not going to the party, I guess you can pass or you can just make something up. We were asked to wear superhero costumes. So what are you going to wear?
I'll go ahead and start. I didn't bring a costume, but if I had a costume, it would be Raven.
Okay, and the reason we're doing this is we're going to tweet these pictures out for fun, okay? So Natalie's Raven. Renee?
So I'll probably take my improv anti-hero person, Skank Girl.
Yes!
Okay. Craig?
Well, I didn't bring a costume either because it was so hard to bring it in luggage. It's like, do I bring underwear or a costume? And so, you know, I'm not going commando, so there you go. You know what I chose.
You can be underwear man.
Well, I thought of going as invisible man, but then someone said, well, don't bother turning up. So I'm just going as agile dude.
Okay, Abby.
Those are all much more clever answers than I. I also do not have a costume for tonight, so.
I've got a Wonder Woman t-shirt.
Yes.
Oh, yay, someone. Check the box. Serge.
I think if there's any superhero that goes well with the drink, it must be Iron Man, because the guy is a drunk. And the suit is awesome. So I didn't know that this whole thing was going on, the superhero thing, before I came here, so I didn't take anything. But if I would have been here, it would have been as Iron Man with a stiff drink in my hand. So.
I'm so envious of that answer. Can I be like Mrs. Iron Man?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Drink in hand.
Yes, and. Right
yes,
there.
And. Yes, and.
It's a bit of a stretch, but I am already in costume as the alter ego of the Tick.
Okay.
This is what he wore in his day life.
We tweet that one out right now. Okay. Steve Vance, okay.
So, Troy, I guess I would go around to all the superheroes and tell them to leave because heroes have no place on Agile teams.
Kapow. Theme.
Mic drop.
Theme. Wow. And I'm going to go through my vendor shirts upstairs and throw one of them on, and we'll figure that out. So, but guess what? That's all the time because there's a party to go to, right? Or something. So we thank everyone for listening to our joint podcast with the Agile Revolution and also the Agile Life and great people that we've met here at Agile 2015. So if you're listening to us, we will put some show notes up that have links to the talks and various things we talked about, including the ability to reach out to Steven or Troy or Serge. Can we put your information on? Okay, so Serge out there, if you want to connect and follow up with them. If you have feedback, just let us know one way or another. We're pretty easy to get a hold of on Twitter. And that's it. So thanks for listening and keep living this Agile life.
Or as we say,
Viva la Revolution.
Oh, applause.